Hello and welcome to Booktopia On. I'm Bronwyn.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about crazy concepts that work. I mean, how many times have you read the back of a book or had someone tell you a plot and you've gone, what?
For me, it's more often when I'm recommending a book and I'm halfway through a sentence telling them what it's about and I realize how stupid
and
it is.
And you segue with, this sounds crazy, like, but trust me, it works.
Yeah, the number of times I've said a sentence, something like that. Like, I know it sounds weird, but just trust me, it's amazing.
Yeah, so there's this guy, right, and he's banished from a city and he lands on this island. And on the island is this this indescribable thing. Is it a native? Is it a monster? Plus, there's a spirit on that island, and he's got his daughter. His daughter goes well.
I know where you are.
What?
The Tempest.
That's bizarre.
The concept of the Tempest is very strange.
And yet,
and at some point, just go with me.
go with me. This is great. There's so many weird books, and so many weird, and you try to.
I thought you were telling the story of Castaway there. For
me too. like
on the island was what a basketball.
But how many times have you finished a really good book? And it's like when someone tells you a really good joke, and then you try and tell your friend, and you stuff it.
Yes.
You've just read a really good book, and you just want to go and tell everyone around it. And then when you start to open your mouth, it just sounds idiotic or weird or stupid or whatever it happens to be, because you just have to read it.
And because normally you're so excited about the book and trying to get someone hooked on it, and so you just trip all over yourself trying to explain it. And you're like, no, trust me.
And also, I mean, most books, when you condense them down to a sentence, are not going to sound great.
Yeah.
Like, well, and there's so much more to a book, and it's great to have your elevator pitch down for the book and all that, but there's so many layers to it, and you're just sort of picking the things that you hope will hook people.
I do love when someone can say to me, it's like X meets Y. Oh,
and
like,
often they're crazy. It sounds...
That will get me every time. If you say it's like this thing and this other thing that's completely unlike the first thing, I'll be like, must read.
Yeah, I've heard some funny ones before, like it's Titanic in space. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I actually pictured Titanic in space.
That was the Starbound trilogy.
It was.
Yeah, and I was like, yep, I'm going to read that.
Me too. I was sold. Because even though the vision that came to my mind was ridiculous, I was like, yep, done.
Sometimes it sounds so stupid, you just want to read it just to see how it works. Yeah.
How they're going to pull it off.
But there are some books where actually the concept of it is just a little bit strange. And I would say, like, one that I consistently had that conversation about where it's like, I know it sounds weird, but was The Time Traveler's Wife.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember trying to explain to people it's not what it sounds like. I know.
How did you try and explain it?
Well, it's all there in the title, so you can't really pretend like it's not about the time traveler's wife. But, you know, trying to convince people who wouldn't ordinarily read anything about time travel that this book was going to, you know, blow their minds.
But time travel is in itself inherently very strange, and you can get some odd concepts. Like, for me, one that I always love to tell people about is Outlander.
That's another one where it shouldn't work, but it does.
Well, and I always start with, it's about this woman, you know, blah, 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 and she goes back in time. She touches a stone and goes back to the 1700s Scotland, and people look at me like...
Immediately people are like, I'm out. And also then you have to say, oh, but she's not from our time as well. She's from the 40s.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole thing gets more and more complicated.
It's like someone telling you a dream.
You know, oh,
I wake up in the morning and they tell you a dream.
You just want them to stop.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't. But that's what like a lot of authors sit down and they've got this great concept in their head and they want to try and tell their story, and it feels like that. And sometimes they'll get so excited at their synopsis and hand it over to you and just like, oh my God, it's like listening to someone tell their dream. It's horrendous. But when they actually write the damn thing,
it makes sense.
Yeah, you're completely taken along with it.
And with dreams, there's always a reason behind why it's weird, like why this and this fit together in your mind when you're sleeping. And I feel like it's the same with books, you know, there's a reason that we use these concepts that we're telling the story, and it might sound crazy, but hey.
I do like finding the examples of, and sometimes I like trying to imagine the authors like pitching it. Even though this one example, like I like to try and imagine Virginia Woolf telling people about Mrs. Dalloway and how they might have just been like, doesn't really sound like that much of an interesting story, because the whole thing is like one day. in the minds of a couple of people, like, preparing for a party, and that's the whole book.
She must have,
I mean, not that I imagine that she went around telling loads of people about it, but imagine a conversation where Virginia Woolf was like, oh, I'm writing a book, and, it's just about someone planning a party, and then everyone goes to the party, the end. Like, it must have been weird.
Imagine her trying to tell everyone to the lighthouse. I mean, that it's like... Really? Is that what you're going to go with, Virginia? I'd like to see the end result. I won't be buying it just yet. Orlando, my God.
Orlando's so ahead of its time as well. Like, sometimes it just fascinates me. Like, how did she write that book at the time that she wrote it?
Mm.
So maybe it's just basically anything Virginia Woolf did.
Yeah, but there's weird things that we have grown accustomed to. So Frankenstein, we mentioned it a couple of podcasts ago.
Would have been outlandish at the time.
Even today. And yet we're just like,
whatever.
Even today, it's a really odd thing to think about.
Like, but we're used to it. It's its own thing now. It's been copied a million times.
But if it hadn't been, imagine if it hadn't been written when it was and it was written now, you'd still probably be like, because it's one thing to, someone loses a leg and they get a prosthetic put on or whatever.
I can't even imagine body parts, a world where Frankenstein isn't a familiar thing. I
mean, absolutely. You know, one I would love... I would love, love, love to hear Fitzgerald trying to explain the Curious Case of Benjamin Button to someone.
Oh, my God.
So this is
I can't imagine that old. Conversation happening in any way that didn't end with me going, I want to read it.
But it's just the weirdest concept. He's born as an old man, baby, and then grows up and younger. It just doesn't, like, it...
It sounds insane, it's mind-boggling. But it works. And you know what else? The Lovely Bones was another one where I had that conversation with people where I was like, oh, yeah, the whole premise of it, people were like,
how many times as a kid were you asked to do a short story and then you ended up dead at the end of it and you're like, oh, I'm writing this from heaven.
Like, I don't and it think was all
once
a dream.
Ever did I do that.
Really?
Neither did I.
No. Oh, come on.
I wrote...
You guys, man.
Gosh. I remember writing a story about aliens. That's all I remember.
Whoops.
You ended a story with, and I'm dead. And
can
I'm
we, edit, can we edit that one out?
Do you still have any of these?
Probably not.
Next time, story time. So, I mean, how important is that hook? Like, if it sounds really normal, is it going to turn you off? If it's the more outlandish it sounds, is it going to hook you? I mean, is that something that appeals to you guys?
Yeah, definitely a little bit.
I think I gravitate towards the more outlandish, the better, because I'm curious and I want to see how it's done.
If they can actually pull it off.
Yeah. And then my difficulty then lies in trying to convince other people to read it without, like, trying to tell them enough to get them interested, but not so much that it starts to sound stupid.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Like, and I used to just, one of these books that has an unusual premise, but every time I said it to people, they were keen, is The Book Thief. So if you say to people, if you mention that death narrates it, everyone's like,
It's not, in my mind, it's not much of an odd concept until you mention it. Death narrates it. It's kind of odd that death narrates it.
But. Like, people who wouldn't ordinarily maybe be interested in reading historical fiction, if you just tossed in, by the way,
death narrates it.
Death narrates this book. They'd be like, okay.
Yeah, especially, that's true.
There's a few writers that really messed with writing that I've fallen for over the years. One is Russell Hoban, who wrote kids' books for years and years and years, and then started writing these adult books. And I get the feeling that because he was so free in the kids' world, that he brought some of that madness with him into the
adult. Yeah, you can be much more free in the kids' world. Yeah.
And Clyndsight is a book that I've always loved, and I'll pick it up and reread it, or just even sample it.
Clyndsight. I thought you said that, but then I'm like, is that a word?
Yeah.
Clyndsight.
Exactly. It's not a word.
And so, and right in this, it begins with he's got a pain between his his right angle and his hypotenuse or something. Like, it's really odd. Hospital is a character, like the main, big noun.
I'll read this book.
God, it's bizarre. It's brilliant. Because he's just nonstop just messing with all the different assumptions that we make as writers and how we should be framing this sort of thing. But the great thing about him is every one of his novels is you can read and follow. Apart from Ridley Walker, which I've had great difficulty with because he made up a language. But the other ones are all so incredibly readable.
So they're not all like Finnegan's Wake?
No, hell no.
Okay.
No, they're really quite thin and they're really approachable. But they've all got these little weird twists in them. Another one which a lot of people would have read is Kurt Vonnegut, who just for people who like experimental writing and fun and darkness and all of it wrapped up together, he's always been one of the go-tos. The Slaughterhouse-Five is the strangest of memoirs of a war experience, memoir fiction of a war experience that you can possibly read. But brilliant, and it gets its point across so well. But the Breakfast of Champions, I think I mentioned Breakfast of Champions in here before. He gets so excited about telling the story that he inserts himself in the story so that he can be there at the climax. Yeah. So
I always get for no reason that I can imagine, I always, when people mention Breakfast of Champions, I always get it confused in my mind with Confederacy of Dunces. I don't know why. Like, just something about those two titles.
And another one was Italo Calvino. A lot of people
have Bonner Winters. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you read this. Yeah, what is it about this book?
It's just mad. It's just messing with the whole way of telling a story and how we tell a story, who's telling a story, who has the rights to owning that tale, and who has the right to the reception of it as well.
I have this book on my shelf. It's one of those, maybe this should be a book that I read.
Reading
Hour coming up. So for ages I've been meaning to read this book because everyone who's ever spoken to me about it makes it sound so fascinating and so interesting, and every copy is different. And like, is that true?
No.
Okay. But they're different somehow? Like, aren't there different versions of it?
I'm not sure. I've only got the one copy. I haven't gone to reading it yet.
But there's multiple different versions of...
It's
multiple different beginnings of the same story, yeah, that's right?
This was something... Roberto Colasso, The Marriage of Cadmus and Harmony, he did this postmodern view of the Greek myths, and so starts it by telling the rape of Europa and then stops and goes, oh, that's one version, and then tells it again and stops and goes, here's another one, and tells it again, and all these different versions of the same story to give you the idea of how these stories were never fixed as we are fixed because we've got paper and we've got printing and all these other things, and the stories were fluid between who was telling it, when they've been told, what reason was being telling. It's brilliant. And I think this is the same kind of world that Italo Calvino kind of was working in, because, you know, we know from our discussions here that books change when you change, and who you are when you first read Room of the View is different to, you know, if you're reading it tomorrow. You know,
but the words technically haven't changed.
The words technically haven't changed.
Yeah. But it's just you that's changed.
Yeah.
Whereas in the old, like, oral storytelling traditions, the stories would change.
Yeah, and they would change. Like, if you were telling a story to a king, you'd tell it one way. If you're telling a story to the peasants, you'd tell it another way. There'd be a different
way. When a story travels from this side of the world to that side of the world, it changes.
Yeah.
You tell a story to your friends versus your parents. Yeah. It changes.
It's one of those things that people love about Shakespeare, is that Shakespeare allows for all that. So the Hamlet could be seen as this kind of story in a communist country, and this kind of story in a capitalist. If you're a post-colonialist, it would be this kind of story. There's a whole way, and that's why it's so malleable, that writing. He's so open to all human experience that cultures grab it. You know, and that's absolutely divine when you've got writing like that.
Yeah, but there are so many different Shakespeares, right? Like, isn't there, like, everyone's... You always hear, this is Russia's Shakespeare, or this is China's Shakespeare. Like, I don't know them. Do they know Shakespeare? Like, that's
what... they do. Yeah. No, it's translated all over the world.
Yeah,
and people, and as you know, I don't know if you've seen the different versions of Hamlet that have been turned into films, or if you've seen it in stage. They never do the full Hamlet. I mean, Kenneth Branagh.
Because that would be 4 hours.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh did the full Hamlet, and then did a short version as well, and that central story that we all generally see when we go to see Hamlet is only just part of the larger bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some other kooky...
Well, has there ever been a plot that's so ridiculous it's turned you off that you've just gone nut, flat out refused to read it?
I can't remember one, because I think curiosity would have made me read it.
One thing I haven't been able to finish, and my brain's probably not going to even help me out here, I'll come back to it. Please hold.
Please hold.
Because it's one of the... They consider it one of the first postmodern novel. And it's just so bizarre. It starts with his own conception.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Okay, well, you find that. And in the meantime, let's talk about a recently published book that is hard to sell to people who don't ever read anything fantasy, is Strange the Dreamer by Lainey Taylor, because that is a fantastical premise. You start telling them that it's all about a place called Weep because the real name of the place has been
forgotten
forever, and there's this kind of thing floating in the sky full of these godlike creatures, and they have blue skin and they have power. And like you start
and they communicate in their dreams, and there's moths, and
don't forget the moths. And so you try and tell that to someone, and you know this person will love the book, right? Because it's a beautiful, gorgeous book. But just the details of the plot make it sound like something very different to what it is.
Well, actually, you just reminded me, literally what I'm reading at the moment, Sleeping Beauties by Stephen Owen King, it sounds ridiculous because it's set in our world, but it's about this sort of plague that that affects women, and it makes, if they fall asleep, they start to grow like this weird, like frothy cocoon stuff on their face. And
that's what happens to me. What happens to you when you go to sleep?
well, my hair is sparkling like gold. No, and so they fall asleep and they have this growth on their face, and if they're woken up, they are vicious and violent. They kill people, like they'll kill their
husband. Yep, this all sounds like me.
Yeah. Basically, it's a comment on society.
But it does sound crazy.
And
and
there's this one woman who is obviously the woman that's behind it, and she's some mystical being, and she has moths following her everywhere, and they're sort of, and she can talk to everything. You know, she can talk to mice and rats and birds and the walls, and like, it's just so odd. And yet it's all set in our world. Like, yeah. It's set in America. It's just like, whoa.
And if you take a plot that's outlandish and you place it in the hands of an author with the skill and
Stephen King.
To ground it and to make it believable and to infuse it with enough feeling and like characters to care about. And
well, I think what's working with this story is that the everyday concepts are really familiar, like the struggles that women face in the daily world
It's relatable.
It's relatable, but then he injects this, you know, weird section, which is very Stephen King. I think of It and all that, and molds them together so seamlessly that you kind of like, you start to consider, this is actually the world that we live in, isn't it? Surely. I mean, any minute now I'm going to fall asleep and a cocoon will grow over my face. Like,
if anyone wakes me up, I may kill them. Did you find the book?
I feel like a complete madman.
John's back.
For not remembering Lawrence Stern, The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy. It is.
I've heard of that
book. Yeah, it is a story that unfolds on itself. He draws into it.
From his conception.
Yeah, so I wish either of my father or my mother, or indeed both of them, as they were in duty both equally bound to it, had mind in what they were about when they begot me.
That's a long way to start a book.
They were busy thinking about the things.
Exactly, that's what he goes on to.
Because, really? Yeah.
It's ribald, it's funny, it's bizarre. I don't really know how to finish it, though. This is the thing. Sometimes I get distracted by great concepts and experimentation. Sometimes the author inserts themselves too regularly into it and I get broken. The spell gets broken all the time.
Mm. Do you know what? I've read a book, The Once in Future King.
Yeah.
And it does that.
Don't say anything bad about this book.
No, I love this book. Okay. But what
this is TH, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love that book.
The one thing that confuses me, though, is, you know, you're on along the journey and Arthur and Merlin off doing their things, and then suddenly the narrator will make a comparison that is modern.
Yeah.
So he'll be like, it was the size of 3 football fields. What? Stop it. We're not. No.
Useful, though.
Oh, yeah. Very useful.
And great for kids reading The Sword of the Stone. At least it brought some sort of, you know, there's some sort of transition there. There's some sort of connection between.
But as much as it helps, it also rips me out of the world. And I'm like, I'm not in, you know,
I also just thought of a favourite of mine that's got a bizarro concept. Or it's more the way that it's told is strange, which is The Princess Bride.
Oh, goodness, yes.
I mean, that's just fantastic.
The framework to tell that story is so crazy that you would never want to even... I don't think you could ever say to anyone handing it over, especially if they've seen the movie, you should just give it to them. Don't tell them anything.
Weird.
Do not warn them.
Inconceivable.
let them read and get confused. But that, but I remember reading that for the first time and actually falling so deeply under the spell that I started to believe that it could actually be a real text.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think I even Googled it at one point. And I'm like, surely, I mean, Sarah, you know there's no such place as Florence. Like, you know that this is not real. But
then you're sitting there thinking, oh, remember that time my friends went through the fire swamp and the giant rats tried to eat them? And you're like, wait, no.
No, more because real. In the book he talks so much about researching this funny little story, The Princess Bride, and he makes it feel so real.
Yeah,
and the struggles he has, like, getting rights to retell the story, and, like, it's all so grounded in reality.
Mm.
And then, I don't know, God, that's a funny book. I think I need to reread it.
One of the books that left me with my, like you were talking about, not knowing what, which way it was up, it was Umberto Eco's Foucault's Pendulum. So I always class this as Da Vinci Code for grown-ups.
for grown-ups.
So many people around the world are angry at you.
Yeah. Good. It is. It deals with all the... Because the setup, it's just a pretty basic setup, but it just leads, it just rolls on. The setup is there's a boutique, intellectual, highly regarded publishing house in Milan or something. And their boss comes along and says to the editors and the publishers, yeah, we're just not making enough. We could be growing a little bit. If we just had, you know, mind, body, spirits doing well, can we just sort of have a few mind, body, spirits texts and we can maybe make some money? And the editors sort of grumble and grumble. Anyway, they write the answer book, you know, the secret answer book, and they publish it. And people start believing that it's the answer book. And so they get dragged into this.
That trips me out.
They drag themselves into this incredible conspiracy. And Umberto Eco had incredible knowledge about all the alternate histories and all the sects and cults and all these different things, like the Templars and the Rosicrucians. And so brings all this together. So, you know, the Da Vinci Code kind of touches on some of this, but this makes you disbelieve everything.
Great.
Yeah, alternate everything. So Shakespeare, did he really write it, or was the Francis Bacon? You know, there's all this stuff just comes in. And I remember finishing that just going, I know nothing.
I love that feeling. I love that feeling of someone just pushing me over and going, ha.
I really want to read that book.
Another one that is, I have to mention, is French Lieutenant's Woman by John Fowles. It's, again, like we're talking about with Italo Calvino and Roberto Colasso and all those, it's a playful book around how books are told. It's absolutely brilliant. But leaning from that to another one, The Magus. I don't know if I could ever describe The Magus to anyone, or The Magus.
Try.
I
thought it was Magus.
Magus. Because it starts off so ordinary. It starts off in the 60s in... with this relationship in London, ordinary, and then they go to the Greek Isles, and suddenly it all turns into this. It's almost like a tempest in a way. And they go to this spot, and there's a point with it. I can't even describe the plot, but there's a point with it where most readers will get so offended to the depths of their soul with it, because he's pointing the bit you don't want anyone else to see, and you throw the book down or you stop reading, and then you have to pick it up again. Around the time of reading it, I spoke to a few people about what it was, and it was always different. It was always different as to where it actually hurt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So everyone reaches this point of no return, but it's different every time.
Yeah, it seemed different every time when I spoke to them. They got offended by something completely different, or they felt that they were being exposed to ridicule at some other point. Yeah, it's an amazing book.
So just before we wrap up, is there, I'm really putting you on the spot here, is there a plot, a crazy plot that you would love to see come to life?
Oh, I mean.
I know, it's a hard question.
Douglas Adams.
What's what that?
You want to see the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in real life?
Yeah, the Earth just goes.
Oh, John. So we get destroyed to make space for a a highway in the... What is it?
I just love the way it just pops it, where we get placed in that universe. Because Earthlings have a really overinflated view of themselves.
But you know what? It gets undone somehow, doesn't it? At some point they remake the Earth.
You have to get through, what is it, the five books of the trilogy?
Yeah. It all comes good in the end. Trust John. I want the world to end. The end, John Purcell.
I on a similar strain, I kind of would love to see Jurassic Park come to life. And I mean, I don't know if I want the theme park to actually go, you know, tits up and everybody get eaten. But
I'm with that you would be interesting. If that means that Chris Pratt is around.
Yes, yeah. He is. In my version, yes,
cool.
He is.
All right, that's cool. I don't know. That's a really
strange idea.
Oh, that would be a terrifying world to live in, I feel like.
It depends. It depends. I mean, if you're living in the book, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't answer it.
You can't answer it. That's okay.
You're fine.
I think.
Performance review. It'll happen eventually. I will Naughty answer corner. It. I will say that I want to live in a world. I don't love these books.
That doesn't
but
matter.
I would like Narnia to be real.
Yes.
Just so that you could walk into a wardrobe and
be in the snow, yeah. Suddenly. And, I've just lost it. It went off the tip of my tongue. Harry Potter. I think that would be an interesting one to live in.
Wait. We almost got through the whole podcast without mentioning
Harry Potter.
Come on.
It is the perfect answer to this question. if any outlandish plot should ever come true,
it is a weird
it's
plot.
Got to be that
it
one.
It is a weird plot.
I still want to be a muggle.
Fine. Yeah, we're all muggles. But I still want to live in this world where
weird things could happen and they just erase our memories. Well, thank you for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.